The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Aniko Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour Magazine, BrainyQuote.com, and the New York Times. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back. Today is, the 6th of July, and we are in the thick of summer, and I hope you're having a lot of fun and enjoying the warmth and the lack of school, maybe. Today we've got a plethora of things we're going to be talking about, just kind of all over the place, little of this, little of that. And the first thing we're going to talk about is friendship ponies. They're back, but some of them are a two-woman job, and these are ponytails with kind of a friendship thread that goes through it. As a kid, few things gave me more joy than getting a multicolor hair wrap woven into my ponytail. This summer, the so-called friendship braid returns, but with anything goes ethos. Play around and enjoy, says Eugene Suleiman, who created rainbow-hued pleats for Maison Margiela by securing silk yarn at the hairline. Mistakes may lead you to something new and fabulous, but while some versions are low fuss, like the model's bungee cord braid at far left, which is, bungee cord of green and blue. It's really kind of cool looking. The blue has green spots on it, and the green, light green, has kind of orange little dots on it. Others, like the rope and velvet extension from the Honi Fall 2017 presentation, may require an extra pair of hands. All right. This style is something you'd do with a friend, Solomon says, hence the name. All right, so we've got friendship ponies, everything we're binge talking about this month. All right, our next article from Glamour is called, Is Beauty Self-Care? Absolutely, says Simone Kitchens, who's all about being more present in her routine. As I write this sentence, I'm thinking about what food I have in the house for dinner and what emails I have to return. I make to-do lists when I meditate. I rewind podcasts because my mind drifts. Present, I am not. But as any Zen master will tell you, the key to being more present is to focus. When you're eating, just eat. When you're talking to friends, just talk. Put down that phone. While self-care, the act of prioritizing time for yourself, is a buzzword these days, I've learned that being present in your beauty routine has benefits too. Some ways I've tried. 1. Find your beauty tribe. Self-care doesn't have to be a solo act. Women often say how uplifting it is to move and breathe with others, says Lauren Ash at Black Girl in Nome. Above right, she's got a lemon stuck to her left eye that she's holding with her left hand. She's next to another girl on the right who also has a lemon stuck to her right eye, holding it with her right hand. One's in red, one's in white. Kind of cute. You can take the same group approach. I make time to do something good for myself with friends, a hike, an evening in with masks. The talk doesn't have to be about serious life goals. Try yoga for your face. Yoga gets oxygen pumping, even to our biggest organ, our skin, says Atlanta yoga teacher Chelsea Jackson Roberts, PhD. There's science there. Studies show regular yoga may help increase circulation, which leads to glow. Her favorite move for relaxing facial tension and upping radiance is lion's breath. Start by breathing deeply through the nose, then exhale widely, sticking out your tongue and sighing. I do this 5 times in a row a couple of times a day. And her last one, work a mantra into your routine. When I had a facial with esthetician and spiritual healer Marshall Tabe of New York and New Mexico, which was a mix of micro-needling and guided meditation, I was struck by the idea of setting an intention with your skincare. At home, Tabe suggests starting with a mantra, something like, I am enough, before whatever your routine is. It helps the time feel healing and not just like a chore. When you're feeling more connected to yourself, she says, that inner glow is real. And she talked about yoga, getting oxygen pumping even to your biggest organ, your skin. We have a kind of an unusual thing right now, article from the New York Times, and it's about another organ, our liver, and it's entitled The Control Tower, and this is from the June 13 edition of the New York Times Magazine. The liver, unloved and unappreciated, is the blob that runs the body. To the Mesopotamians, the liver was the body's premier organ, the seat of the human soul and emotions. The ancient Greeks linked the liver to pleasure. The words hepatic and hedonic are thought to share the same root. The Elizabethans referred to their monarch not as the head of state, but as its liver. And woe to any people saddled with a lily-livered leader, whose bloodless cowardice would surely prove their undoing. Yet even the most ardent liverati of history may have underestimated the scope and complexity of the organ. Its powers are so powerful or so profound that the old toss-away line, "What am I, chopped liver?" can be seen as a kind of humble brag. After all, a healthy liver is the one organ in the adult body that, if chopped down to a fraction of its initial size, will rapidly regenerate and perform as if brand new. Which is a lucky thing, for the liver's to-do list is second only to that of the brain, and numbers well over 300 items, including systematically reworking the food we eat into usable building blocks for ourselves, neutralizing the many potential harmful substances that we incidentally or deliberately digest, generating a vast pharmacopoeia of hormones, enzymes, clotting factors, and immune molecules, controlling blood chemistry, and really, we're just getting started. We have mechanical ventilators to breathe for you if your lungs fail, dialysis machines if your kidneys fail, and the heart is mostly just a pump, so we have an artificial heart, said Dr. Anna Locke, president of the American Association for the Study of Liver Diseases and the director of clinical hepatology at the University of Michigan. But if your liver fails, there's no machine to replace all its different functions, and the best you can hope for is a transplant. And while scientists admit it hardly seems possible, the closer they look, the longer the liver's inventory of talents and tasks becomes. In one recent study, researchers were astonished to discover that the liver grows and shrinks by up to 40% every 24 hours, while the organs around it barely budge. Others have found that signals from the liver may help dictate our dietary choices, particularly our cravings for sweets like a ripe peach or a tall glass of Newman's Own Virgin Limeade, which our local supermarket chain has, to our personal devastation, suddenly stopped selling. So please, liver, get a grip. Scientists have also discovered that hepatocytes, The metabolically active cells that constitute 80% of the liver possess traits not seen in any other normal cells of the body. For example, whereas most cells have two sets of chromosomes, two sets of genetic instructions on how a cell should behave, hepatocytes can enfold and deftly manipulate up to eight sets of chromosomes, and all without falling apart or turning cancerous. That sort of composed chromosomal excess, said Dr. Marcus Gromp, who studies the phenomenon at Oregon Health and Science University, is super unique and most likely helps account for the liver's regenerative prowess. Scientists hope that the new insights into liver development and performance will yield novel therapies for the more than 100 disorders that afflict the organ, many of which are on the rise worldwide, in concert with soaring rates of obesity and diabetes. It's a funny thing, said Valerie Guan Evans, a liver specialist at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. The liver is not a very sexy organ. It doesn't look important. It just looks like a big blob. But it is quietly vital, the control tower of the body. And the hepatocytes that it is composed of are astonishing. The liver is our largest internal organ, weighing 3.5 pounds and measuring 6 inches long. The reddish-brown mass of 4 unevenly sized lobes sprawls like a beached sea lion across the upper right side of the abdominal cavity, beneath the diaphragm, and atop the stomach. The organ is always flush with blood, holding about 13% of the body's supply at any given time. Many of the liver's unusual features are linked to its intimate association with blood. During fetal development, blood cells are born in the liver, and though that task later migrates to the bone marrow, the liver never loses its taste for the body-wide biochemical gossip that only the circulatory system can bring. Most organs have a single source of blood. The liver alone has two blood supplies, the hepatic artery conveying oxygenated rich blood from the heart, the hepatic portal vein dropping off blood drained from the intestines and spleen. That portal, blood delivers semi-processed foodstuffs in need of hepatic massaging, conversion, detoxification, storage, secretion, elimination. Everything you put in your mouth must go through the liver before it does anything useful elsewhere in the body, Dr. Locke said. The liver likes its bloodliness leaky. In contrast to the well-sealed vessels that prevent direct contact between blood and most tissues of the body, the arteries and veins that snake through the liver are stippled with holes, which means they drizzle blood right onto the hepatocytes. The liver cells, in turn, are covered with microvilli, finger-like protrusions that massively enlarge the cell surface area in contact with blood, said Dr. Marcus Heim, a liver researcher at the University of Basel. Hepatocytes are swimming in blood, he said. That's what makes them so incredibly efficient at taking up substances from the blood. As the master sampler of circulating blood, the liver keeps track of the body's moment-to-moment energy demands, releasing glucose as needed from its stash of stored glycogen, along with any vitamins, minerals, lipids, amino acids, or other micronutrients that might be required. New research suggests the liver may take a proactive as well as a reactive role in the control of appetite and food choice. Humans are famously fond of sweets, for example, presumably a legacy of our fruit-eating primate ancestors. But to gorge on sugar-rich foods, even in the relatively healthy format of a bucket full of Rainier cherries, could mean neglecting other worthy menu items. Reporting in the journal Cell Metabolism, Matthew Gillam of the University of Copenhagen and his colleagues showed that after exposure to a high-sugar drink, the liver seeks to dampen further sugar indulgence by releasing a signaling hormone called fibroblast growth factor 21, or FGF21. The effort is not always successful. For reasons that remain unclear, the hormone comes in active and feeble varieties, and the researchers found that people with a mutant version of FGF21 confess to a lifelong passion for sweets. The scientists are searching for other liver-borne hormones that might influence the hunger for protein or fat. It makes sense that the liver could be a nexus of metabolic control, Dr. Gillam says. At some level, it knows more than the brain does about energy availability and whether you're eating too many pears. The liver also keeps track of time. In a recent issue of the journal Cell, Ulrich Schibler of the University of Geneva and his colleagues described their studies of the oscillating liver and how it swells and shrinks each day depending on an animal's normal circadian rhythms and feeding schedule. The researchers found that in mice, which normally eat at night and sleep during the day, the size of the liver expands by nearly half after dark and then retrenches come daylight. The scientists also determined the cause of the changing dimensions. "We wanted to know, is it just extra water or glycogen?" Dr. Schibler said, "because that would be boring." It wasn't boring. The total soup of the liver turns out to be different. He said, "Protein production in mouse hepatocytes rises sharply at night, followed by equivalent protein destruction during the day. Evidence suggests that a similar extravaganza of protein creation and destruction occurs in the human liver too, but the timing is flipped to match our largely diurnal pattern." The researchers do not yet know why the liver oscillates, but Schibler suggested it's part of the organ's fastidious maintenance program. "The liver gets a lot of bad stuff coming through," he said. "If you damage some of its components, you need to replace them. By having a rhythm to that replacement," he said, "you keep the liver in good state." Adding to the liver's repair protocol, Dr. Grump of Oregon Health and Science University said, is the extreme plasticity of hepatocytes. He and others have shown that, through their extraordinary ability to handle multiple sets of chromosomes and still perform and divide normally, liver cells become almost like immune cells, genetically diverse enough to handle nearly any poison thrown at them. "Our ancestors didn't have healthy, refrigerated food," he said. "They ate a lot of crap, probably literally. And the liver in prehistoric times was continuously bombarded with toxins. You need every mechanism there is to adapt to that." The liver rose to the evolutionary challenge. So yes, I'm chopped liver and proud. Well, it's summer and you may be at the beach, and I have a tiny little clip from the New York Times about eels. Eels find the way with magnetism. European eels are born and die in the North Atlantic Ocean, but spend most of their lives in rivers or estuaries across Europe and North Africa. In between, they traverse thousands of miles of ocean, and scientists have long suspected that these critically endangered fish use magnetism to help guide them. During the time of day corresponding to ebb tide, researchers now report juvenile eels will face magnetic south, suggesting they pair a biological compass with an internal tide clock. Aligning with the tides may help the eels travel toward shore. It's just amazing. And speaking of water, the class of 2017 at NASA, it's everyone into the pool. Last week, NASA announced its 22nd class of astronauts. 7 men and 5 women were chosen from more than 18,300 applicants, the most the space agency has ever received. Officially, they are astronaut candidates who will now go through 2 years of training, like practicing for spacewalks in a 60-foot deep swimming pool. Because Russia is NASA's main partner on the International Space Station, they will also learn to speak Russian. How's that for some summer activity? And finally, this is really cool. There is a picture of an African safari, I think, and it's got this brown tree with huge branches just really spreading out way across the horizon there. And you're never going to believe what's on it. Goats. Goats on the lower left and upper left branch, the lower middle and upper branches, upper and lower middle branches, and the upper right branch. It is absolutely amazing. They are on top of these branches, and it's called Tree Party. Hungry goats learn to branch out. Ha ha. No, this is not an illustration from a book by Dr. Seuss. These domestic goats live in southwestern Morocco, where the climate is dry and in some seasons the only available forage is in the trees. So the goats climb up to get it. Goats are good climbers. Some sure-footed species live happily on mountains, leaping from ledge to ledge. But these domestic goats are not born with an ability to climb trees. They learn the technique as kids. Their keepers help them climb, and eventually the goats learn to do it themselves. In the autumn, when there is little food on the ground, they spend most of their time grazing the treetops. The trees benefit too. Many animals eat the seeds of plants and then defecate them at another location. But the seeds of the argan trees that these goats graze on are too big to pass. Fortunately for the trees, goats are ruminants. They chew their cud and regurgitate it to be re-chewed before being swallowed for good. The researchers suspect that while the goats ruminate, they spit out the large seeds, often far away from the mother plant, increasing the chance of seedling survival. And that's by Nicholas Bacalar, New York Times, June 13. Okay, over the summer you may have a little extra time and you might want to dabble in the kitchen. I have a really neat recipe for spinach frittata with Indian spices. And we all know that Indian spices are supposed to be so healthy for us. And you can make this easy flavor-packed egg dish for only about $5. You can also try it with toasted pita, which adds about $2. Serve leftovers anytime, hot, warm, or cold. All right, these are the ingredients. 3 teaspoons coconut, olive, or vegetable oil divided. 1 large onion finely chopped. 2 cloves garlic peeled and minced. 1 thick slice of fresh ginger root peeled and minced. 1 tablespoon curry powder or more to taste, 1 small jalapeno minced, that's optional, 8 large eggs beaten, 2 cups baby spinach or chopped flat leaf spinach leaves, 1/3 cup whole milk yogurt, and 1/2 teaspoon kosher salt. For the garnish, 2 tablespoons whole milk yogurt, 2 tablespoons toasted chopped walnuts or sliced almonds, and 2 tablespoons unsweetened shredded coconut, toasted if desired, and 1 lime or lemon quartered. The night before, place a 9-inch skillet over medium-low heat and add 2 teaspoons oil. Add onion, garlic, ginger, curry powder, 1/3 cup water, and jalapeno if you're using it, and cook, partly covered, stirring occasionally until onion is fragrant, soft, and slightly caramelized, 20 to 25 minutes. Let it cool. Meanwhile, place eggs, spinach, yogurt, and salt in a medium bowl and mix well. It should look very spinachy. Add onion mixture and stir well to combine. Cover and refrigerate overnight. Heat oven to 350. Place skillet over medium heat, and when it's hot, add the remaining 1 teaspoon oil. Add the spinach egg mixture and cook until the edges begin to set, 1 or 2 minutes. Transfer the skillet to the oven. Cover and bake until mixture is completely set and no longer jiggly, about 20 minutes. Divide into 4 servings. Garnish each with a quarter of the yogurt, nuts, coconut, and lime wedges. And that actually I kept for you from the March 2017 edition of Glamour. I just thought it looked so good. Anyway, enjoy that and happy cooking. And finally, here's some yummy notes on honey. Oh, honey. And this is from Glamour July issue. This delish, gooey, all-natural nectar does more than just sweeten your tea and granola. It's dripping with benefits that can make you glow from head to toe. Honey is often pegged as a healthier alternative to sugar. This powerful, wholesome ingredient has beauty perks too. Honey is loaded with antioxidants, enzymes, and nutrients that help to cleanse, nourish, and hydrate your skin and hair. It also attracts moisture and locks it in, helping to create lush, strong strands and a healthy glow. So what's not to love? Nothing, honey. And I leave you today with a thought on summer. Rest is not idleness. And to lie sometimes on the grass under trees on a summer's day, listening to the murmur of the water or watching the clouds float across the sky, is by no means a waste of time. And that's by John Lubbock. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure you listen next time. We hope that you have enjoyed this program. I'm Aniko Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. Enjoy your summer. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.